Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR. Hope you had a nice weekend. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Yes, sir. Back at it again for another week.
Is your full name Frederick? Or just Fred?
Frederick Samuel.
Frederick Samuel. Oh. And Edward?
Edward Michael.
And Timothy Bennett.
There you go.
My name is Timothy Bennett Wildman. That would be seven letters in each word.
Ooh, so you, a triple seven.
So you tell me. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that's God's number.
There you go. Number of completion.
Times three, the number of the Trinity.
Yeah.
We got something going on.
I do not exactly need this kind of pressure. The other day I was at the convenience store. And so my total for my purchase came up to 666.
Ooh, that's when you said throwing a pack of gum.
That's what I told the lady. I said, throw me in something else here. I can't have that printed out. She started laughing. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. If you would like to follow us on the internet today, go to Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show there. We also post the stories that we discuss and talk about on our Facebook page, and you can engage with other folks who listen to this program. Hey, before we jump into the news of the day, our producer Brent Creeley's back from a week of vacation. Brent, pull over the microphone here.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing, brother?
Good. How are y'all?
So where'd you go for vacation?
I went to Gatlinburg, family vacation to Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
What'd y'all do up there? Where'd you stay?
We stayed at a condo up on the mountains. Mm-hmm. It was a condo big enough for eight of us, so it was a good family retreat getaway.
What do you do in the mountains for 7 days in a condo with eight of your family members?
Well,
because I don't know if that
play
be,
a lot of Uno.
I don't know if that'd be good for our family or not. Here, huh? We might come home after 3 days.
You've got a bunch of little ones too.
That's what I'm talking about.
There's a kind of like a motor trail up there. It's called Cade's Cove.
I'm familiar with it.
And yeah. I think it's 13 miles long, something mm-hmm. like that. Anyway, you drive through it, beautiful scenery, beautiful mountains. You know, while yeah. you're driving through, there's bear, deer, turkey. You know, it's just, I'm a hunter. I love to hunt. So the outdoors, that's kind of right up my.
You don't hunt driving down the parkway, right?
Yeah, he pulls up, rolls down the window.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be here talking to you guys today, I'm afraid.
I think the park rangers will smile on that.
Right. So we did that and took the kids to Dollywood was closed. So we found another couple of spots for amusement attractions. And
you showed me a picture of a black bear.
Yes. We was getting ready to leave Thursday morning and there was a black bear at our garbage can that was where was loading up the car. So my kids were inside the car. We was putting luggage and coolers and things like that in the back. And I told them, I said, just go ahead and close your doors and I'm going to close this. I said, you stay right there. And the bear came within, I'm going to say, 6-7 feet from us. I mean, it wasn't just a grown bear, but it was.
While you were inside the car?
We were standing outside the car. The kids were inside the car. So it was.
You let the bear get between 6 feet of you while you're standing there?
Yes.
I think you noticed it when you were packing, and it was 6 or 7 feet away, right?
Yes. And we just sit there and obviously just watched it because we was not going to shoo the bear
away. I got it. You know? So you just had to
wait him out.
Okay.
Oh, I would have gone into
you sort of got caught in the moment.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You didn't walk up to the bear.
No.
Me worried there for just
no.
a minute.
Okay. Yeah. That no.
But the bear was cleaning out your garbage can.
He was trying to. They got metal bins around the garbage can, so he mm-hmm. was trying to figure his way to get into that.
That's a memory right there. Your kids won't soon forget.
That is true. He would walk around the front of the car and come around to the side and go to the, back Total, to the garbage.
Totally and, afraid of human beings. Huh?
Oh, yes. Very, very much. Yes. So,
all right.
We enjoyed our time.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful. At one time, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park was the number one most visited park in America. It may still be.
I guess because of its central location, I guess it would.
Well, on the East Coast, and it's that's where you're talking about is the great, Gatlinburg.
Yeah.
Is it Pigeon Forge?
Pigeon Forge.
That's the other.
Yeah, Pigeon Forge is right before you come into Gatlinburg.
Gatlinburg. Gotcha. Welcome back, brother. Welcome
Thank
back.
Guys.
All right, Fred. What's going on, man?
Well, our top story this hour, and it's just breaking within the last hour, is a United States Supreme Court decision that basically hands tremendous power to the homosexual community. That's the way to summarize it. In this particular, the two cases we're dealing with, the dismissal, the firing of homosexual employees.
These were rulings handed down this morning?
Just handed down this morning. 6-3 decision with Justice Neil Gorsuch writing for the majority, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and the four liberal judges. At issue was, does Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which mentions discrimination based on race, religion, national origin, and sex, can that be expanded to homosexuals and transgenders? That was the big issue. And led by Neil Gorsuch, the alleged conservative, one of the alleged conservatives on the Supreme Court, they said, yes, we are deciding that the word sex in that Civil Rights Act of 1964 includes homosexuals, includes transgenders. Now, lawyers for employers, the Trump administration had argued that the common understanding of sex discrimination in 1964 was dealing with women and men and did not encompass discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. But the lawyers for the workers responded that discrimination against employees based on sexual orientation or transgender status must, as a matter of logic, take account of sex. And so in this 6-3 decision led by Neil Gorsuch, they said that basically transgenders, homosexuals, are now be given the same protection under that Act of 1964. Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, this is a devastating ruling. This is maybe more devastating than the marriage ruling in 2015, the Obergefell ruling. Our republic is in serious, serious trouble. Here's part of the problem. Now, Abraham Hamilton III, who is our attorney, is also a constitutional attorney. He is going through this with a fine-tooth comb. I'm sure he'll be exploring that tonight on his program. We will talk about it, I'm sure, more this week. But a cursory reading of this ruling, it's called Bostick versus Clayton County. The Supreme Court, this is again Neil Gorsuch, who is supposed to be a conservative, he says, because the whole question comes down to the word sex, what does that mean? Gorsuch said, appealing to roughly contemporaneous dictionaries, the employers say that, as used here, the term sex in 1964 referred to, and they quoted dictionaries, status as either male or female as determined by reproductive biology. Gorsuch says, we proceed on the assumption that sex signified what the employers suggest, referring only to biological distinctions between male and female. Still, he said, that's just a starting point. And then Neil Gorsuch, writing for the majority, goes on to unravel the meaning of the word sex and because of. And in dissent, Justice Alito said there is only one word for what the court has done today, legislation. He said Title VII's prohibition of discrimination because of sex still means what it has always meant, but the court is not deterred by these constitutional niceties, and he accuses the majority of usurping the constitutional authority of the other branches, which I think is absolutely true.
I have a statement here of reaction from the Alliance Defending Freedom, a Christian legal firm. They quote John Bursch, who is the ADF vice president of the appellate advocacy. He says, redefining sex to mean gender identity will create chaos and enormous unfairness for women and girls in athletics, women's shelters, and many other contexts. Civil rights laws that use the word sex were put in place to protect equal opportunities for women. Allowing a court or government bureaucrats to redefine a term with such a clear and important meaning undermines those very opportunities, the ones the law was designed to protect.
Now, we will at some point, I'm sure this week, hear from Abe as he kind of unpacks this ruling. In terms of the effect of this ruling on Christian colleges and Christian schools, even a ministry like ours, but one thing is absolutely clear, and that is folks in all public facilities, all facilities of public accommodations and restaurants, whatever, you are going to start seeing men in women's bathrooms. You will see men participating in women's sports. What the court has done here is a travesty. It is insanity. But we were talking before the program started, Tim. This is a Romans 1 moment that when you abandon God, you begin to portray yourselves as fools. And proclaiming yourself to be wise, you become as fools. And that's what the Supreme Court has done. This is devastating. I'm not trying to oversell it. This is a huge moment in the history of this country.
Well, and also the opinion was written by the Neil Gorsuch.
Yes, and the Chief Justice John Roberts.
Right, and Gorsuch, of course, the Trump appointee, and Kavanaugh, the other one. Mm-hmm. Kavanaugh voted against this.
Yes.
6-3 decision?
6-3 decision.
Kavanaugh, Thomas, and Alito.
Yeah. Well, that just goes to show you can never know what a Supreme Court justice is going to do. I don't blame this on President Trump.
No.
I mean, he went with the best choice that given to him by the Federalist Society.
Right.
A conservative, staunchly conservative legal organization that advises the president on mm-hmm. judges.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never know. For sure,
right.
How judges are going to rule, you can guess, and they have a record. But let me ask you this. What does this mean practically speaking? Because I don't think that people discriminate today outside of maybe Christian organizations that have a doctrinal position on homosexuality. That is, it's a sin, so we can't hire somebody that's living in sin to be on our staff, for example, or organizations like ours. That have a doctrinal statement. What does this mean practically? How is this any different than anything? Well, what Fred mentioned from the women's movement is going to be devastated by this.
Right. Yes.
But go ahead.
Yeah. Let me just come to the impact on Christians in this country. So obviously these other public accommodations, that's going to be a huge impact as well. I said in our leadership meeting this morning that I did a lot of writing in the late 90s and early 2000s on the non-discrimination, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA, which has now become
the Equality Act,
which I don't think is even necessary anymore because
right.
that's what Samuel Alito says. This is legislation. They couldn't get the Equality Act passed in Congress because of its effect on religious organizations and so on and so forth. So the Supreme Court just said, well, we don't care. We're just going to legislate from the bench. Here's what I think is going to be the first impact. It is going to be on Christian colleges and Christian schools because they are going to have to go to court to defend their right not to have to hire transgenders or homosexuals. When I was doing all this research and writing on ENDA and then followed by the Equality Act, the only carve out, the only exemption that these laws were giving was for religious teachers. So if you have a Christian high school, a Christian school, a Christian college, because of your religious doctrine, you can say, we will not hire homosexuals to teach our religious doctrine. but you could not exempt the football coach or the secretary or the administrator or the science teacher or the English teacher because they don't specifically teach religion. So those schools are going to have to go to court and have to now argue against a Supreme Court ruling which states that you cannot discriminate against homosexuals and transgenders, just as if those schools said, we don't hire black people or we don't hire women. If you say that, if you publicly say, no, we don't hire black people, you're going to get sued and you're going to go to court and you're going to have to argue that you're allowed to be exempt from Title VII. I think this is a real serious problem and a threat, starting with religious education. And I'm not sure where it's going to wind up with churches.
So what you're saying, basically, this is made, sex, that is male, female, and skin color, those are benign. Those are, how would you say those are?
Determined at birth.
Yeah.
Yes, and that the courts have ruled that that's a benign and immutable.
Everybody accepts that, and right. If you discriminate on those bases, then you can be taken to court, right? So what you're saying is, bottom line, help me if I'm oversimplifying this thing, or if I'm not making it plain enough. What the court has said today, the Supreme Court, is that we the Supreme Court of the United States, equate someone being gay or lesbian or transgendered as the same as,
yes,
race or sex.
Yes.
Identifying is equivalent to being born male or female.
Yes. If a person says, I'm a male, okay? If I say I'm a female, what the court has argued is, yes, you are.
That is insanity.
Yes.
Huh? Mm-hmm. And that will, so now, let's take it out of, so now you have, well, we can talk about this more later with Abe, what this means is, but for women's sports, for example, in the U.S.,
yes,
the Supreme Court has said today with this ruling that a man can play women's sports.
Right.
A male can play female sports, and there's nothing you can do to stop him.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was...
If he says he's a woman.
This was specifically a ruling dealing with employment, but I think it is going to include women's sports. Well, that's what ADF is saying.
That's what ADF is saying. Now, these two cases that were ruled on this morning were not the Harris Funeral Home.
Although it is mentioned in this ruling.
It is mentioned in this ruling.
For those who don't know, that's the funeral home in Michigan,
mm-hmm,
that a man who worked for them.
Yes.
He decided he was a woman.
I'm going to come back after vacation. I'm going to dress like a woman. That's what he said.
Right. And the funeral home said, no, you're not. We didn't hire you. Mm-hmm. We didn't hire a man to dress like a woman. That's not our consistent with our corporate policy and so on. And that decision has yet to be announced, although it'll have to be announced today or Thursday.
Today or Thursday are the 2 days remaining in the Supreme Court's schedule.
But if you look at this decision today, it doesn't bode well for that, right?
No,
right.
No. It would be inconsistent of the court to then say that in the Harris case, but we look at this differently.
And I'm going to say this. I'm not sure. Again, Abe is studying the ruling, right, so we didn't want to disturb him and pull him in. But this ruling has three cases on it. All three deal with these issues. Bostick versus Clay County, Georgia. Altitude Express versus Zarda and Moore. And it mentions Harris Funeral Homes versus the EEOC. And it does on the body of the decision, it does mention the Harris Funeral case. So I'm not sure if we get a separate ruling on this.
Right.
I think we do, but I'm not sure. This may just be their decision on all three cases.
All right. Well, we'll have to, Abraham Hamilton III is reading through this, and he can give us Brent asked him if he wants to come over at 11:05 to talk about this. He may not want to. Abe may be studying it, but he may not have time for that, but may want to wait till tomorrow, but we'll see. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Well, the next story takes us to Atlanta, where over the weekend, yesterday or late Saturday night, a Wendy's restaurant was burnt to the ground. And that was, reports say, in reaction to an incident at that restaurant late Saturday evening. Police were called by the management of the Wendy's restaurant because there was a car in the drive-thru that wasn't moving. And they said the driver was asleep or unconscious. So the police arrive. And to summarize, basically, the man behind the wheel is checked. His alcohol level is over the limit. There's a conversation that goes on for more than half an hour as the police are discussing things with him. And at some point, when they realize his alcohol level is over, that is justification for arrest.
That's the reason he was passed out in the car. He was drunk, and too drunk to drive.
Too drunk to move through the drive-thru.
Yeah. And so the police came and on the request of the Wendy's
management. Yep. So they get him out of the car. They handcuff him. But as they were in the midst of handcuffing him, he grabs one of the police officer's tasers.
Now, by the way, let me just say, the video shows this guy, who was much bigger than the two police officers,
yes,
throwing him around. This is a big dude.
Yes. This guy starts to run away from them.
No, hold on just a minute, Fred. He fights them.
He fights them.
It wasn't a tussle.
No.
This man and was fighting these two cops.
Yes.
Man was a black man.
Yes.
The two cops were white.
Yes.
So he refuses to comply with the arrest. He did, and he starts fighting them.
Yes.
And one time punches one of them too. I mean, it's a real fight.
It's a real fight. And then he grabs a taser.
Yes.
And he starts to run away from the police officers.
That's correct. And the video shows that at some point this man, Rayshard Brooks, turns around to his right and shoots the taser at the police officer who is chasing him.
Yeah.
At that point, the police officer shot at least twice.
Right, and the guy died.
Right.
Then so what happened there, most people have seen this video by now. But the police officers, the one who shot was fired from his job, and maybe today, I say maybe, not hopeful, I'm just saying perhaps today he will be charged with murder.
That is correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. And the police chief of Atlanta resigned immediately.
Yes.
So, from what I saw, everything, and I saw the complete thing. If a police officer is going to get in trouble for this and be charged for murder, fired from his job, anyone would ever want to be a police officer, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or to confront anyone, especially an African American male. I would just drive on down the street. I wouldn't respond. I said this last week. This is what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen. Go ahead.
Yeah. The district attorney said that this cop could be charged with murder.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, he doesn't know what the guy's turning around and pointing at him. They show him. They're both running full tilt.
Yeah.
And if he does tase the cop, he could then turn around and get his gun and shoot him. I mean, this is a lose-lose situation for these cops.
And this, with this guy running away with a taser, tell me how far the cop's supposed to chase him.
Yeah.
And when he does, let's say the guy's trapped, then what does he do?
Mm-hmm.
Does he continue 30 more minutes of Dr. Phil?
Yeah.
Trying to talk the guy down? The guy just tried to beat up two cops and resisted arrest, and now he's going to be charged with murder. Likely. We'll be back in a moment.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, And you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Maybe it's just me, but some days I wonder if the country's gone slap crazy, as in cheese done slid off the cracker crazy. The other day, the country music group Lady Antebellum made national headlines when they announced they were changing the name of their band. Instead of Lady Antebellum, they will now be known as Lady A. The band members say they did not take into account the association that weighs down the word antebellum. They said it harkened back to the Civil War era and slavery. Lady A apologized for the deep hurt the name of their band has caused over the years and for anyone who feels unsafe, unseen, or unvalued. It's not exactly clear what the letter A stands for in Lady A. A few years ago, Confederate Railroad came under fire for their band's name, but instead of bowing down to the social justice warriors, Confederate Railroad did what any red-blooded country music band would do. They fought back. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio Network. Momentarily, we will go to our interview with Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation. I wanted him to talk about Christopher Columbus and what the real story is about him in particular, because statues of Christopher Columbus are being destroyed around the country by vandals. And his story of Christopher Columbus needs to be told. Fred, just real quickly to follow up on what you were talking about with the Atlanta policeman over there. Do we know yet whether he's been charged?
No.
Okay.
But the autopsy that was done and the statements that are being made by officials would lead one to believe that that police officer will be charged with murder.
Okay. You're going to have, I hate to say this, but I think everybody knows this with any common sense, you're going to have massive resignations and retirements of police.
It's happening already.
Okay, talk about that.
In Seattle, over the weekend, 35 members of the Seattle Police Department saying, we're taking early retirement. We're out of here. Seven police officers in Minneapolis were out of here. We can't do this anymore. And then I was listening to an interview with a Tulsa police officer this morning, and he was saying every police officer he talks to, he said, don't want to be part of this anymore. It's not worth it. You got police officers that are being paid, in some cases, peanuts. And they're saying this is not worth it.
I tell you what, if I'm a white police officer in these cities, especially these larger cities like that, and they call me to a incident involving an African-American male, I'm not going. Or if I get there, I'm telling the guy going down, he's on down the road. Am I the only one who thinks like
no,
this?
No, that's human nature. And then what you'd have is you'd have black officers saying, "Listen, I don't want to go to these high crime areas either."
Yeah.
You know, because they can. Well, there was five out of six of them that got in trouble for dragging those two girls out of their vehicle when they refused to.
Yeah,
they were black.
Yeah, and in Baltimore a few years ago, some of those police officers who were charged were black, were African American. So you're right, Ed.
Well, with the retirements too, I think you'd see far more cops retiring, taking early retirement if they could.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones you mentioned, the 35 in Seattle, I think,
right,
they had put in enough time to take early retirement.
Right.
A lot of these others can't afford to do it right now, but if they could, they'd be out too.
Well, imagine trying to recruit for a police department. I mean, Ferguson, Missouri ran into this problem. They couldn't, the bunch of their officers retired, left. I'm not sure if they're still looking for police officers in that city.
And you're going to find that cops who want to stay in that career are going to leave the big cities for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
And they're going to go to smaller communities where the likelihood of having to be confronted with these kinds of situations is going to be a little bit less. So big cities are going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, again, if you watch the video from Atlanta the other night, and those two police officers talked for 30 minutes with this fella.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear some of the audio? I think this was the one. There were people standing around laughing as this guy is tossing these cops around and resisting. Absolutely no respect for the law. Just laughing. They thought it was funny. They weren't horrified.
Well, that's what I'm saying. From now on, this is what I said 2 weeks ago, and this is not rocket science. You have a respect for law and order is diminishing in this country, and you're going to have, like this fella here, you're going to have people saying, you're not going to arrest me, cop. They're going to be giving them the middle finger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cussing.
Huh? Cussing. And so at that point, what is a police officer trained to do?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, what if you got a 165-pound police officer dealing with a 6'3", 270-pound man?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Huh? Well, then what you – you had two guys, two
yes.
cops.
They couldn't keep him on the ground.
They couldn't keep him on the ground. So,
and he was drunk.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean.
But here we are. The guys, what led to the guy, the police officers, I guess they were supposed to let the guy run off and then chase him through the neighborhoods, right?
Until he got tired. This is
if
absurd.
They could find him.
Mm. It's absurd.
But now.
What people are saying the guys should have done.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stephen, you there?
I'm here, Tim.
Tell everybody about the Providence Foundation.
Well, the Providence Foundation, which I helped found over 35 years ago and lead, is a Christian educational organization whose mission is to train leaders to transform their culture for Christ. And we do that by educating in a biblical worldview. So we teach biblical principles of law, government, education, economics, teach providential history, which is true history, in order to bring God's truth to bear in order that we might have a flourishing society.
All right, Christopher Columbus, the floor is yours, and take as long as you want.
Well, as you pointed out earlier, you know, the anarchists are attacking everything, in especially Western civilization, which is founded upon Christianity, and trying to tear it down, destroy. We've already removed most of this teaching from our schools, and that's why these people who launch out and tear down these statues don't know what they're doing. But Columbus, you know, is now a target. Many statues of him have been pulled down or targeted. He's been a target in the past years as well. But because he represents, he was used of God to open up the new world to colonization. Of course, to the leftist, he represents the scourge of the world today, which is white European men. So they attack him, but Columbus was a product of his age. issues. And anytime you look at history, you have to look at people in the light of the time in which they live, because, you know, man is learning. The gospel progresses, and as the gospel progresses and takes root in societies, it influences and brings more liberty and light to mankind. And that's the history of the last 2,000 years. And so Columbus certainly had some shortcomings, but when you look at his life, he was motivated by his faith in God. And after his third voyage, he wrote a book. It's called Book of Prophecies, which is an interesting title of a book for a seaman to write. But he talks about, you know, what motivated him to give most of his life to fulfill the vision in his heart. He thought that he could reach the east by sailing west. He knew the world was round. In his Book of Prophecies, it contains hundreds of prophetic scriptures that talk about propagating the gospel, carrying it to the ends of the earth, because he was responding to Marco Polo's request that he got from the great Khan of what is today China, a couple of centuries before Columbus lived, that said, send the missionaries to preach the gospel, and it really hadn't been done, so he wanted to do that. And it also contains letters he wrote, one to the king and queen in Spain, of Ferdinand and Isabella, who financed his voyage. He said, it was the Lord who put into my mind. I feel his hand upon me that, in fact, it'd be possible to sail from here to the Indies. So clearly his desire to propagate the gospel is reflected in his writings and the log of his first journal and his Book of Prophecies. He wasn't. Again, he had problems because he was a product of his age in which people lived, but he was sincere, a sincerely devoted man, and that was his mission to do that. But, of course, as we all know, he didn't reach India. He didn't know that at the time, but when he landed on an island in what is today the Bahamas, he named it San Salvador in honor of his Savior, Saint Holy Savior. And the natives that he encountered, he called Indians because he had thought he reached some island, you know, near the India at the time. But as he talks about in his log of the first journal, he wanted to propagate him. He said, hey, these natives are very receptive, you know, that they are peaceful. I think that we can easily convert them to the Christian faith. They don't seem to have any religion, and he instructed his men to treat them well and to help them and to assist them in this. So his motive was Christian. His encounter with the natives was to teach them the gospel. But an interesting story, Tim, is that, you know, the first Indians he met were peaceful. They were Arawaks. And but after traveling around, visiting different islands in the Caribbean, he found out that all the Indians weren't peaceful. The Arawaks told them, you know, of these, their enemies. They called them Caribs, where we get the name for the Caribbean Sea. And these Caribs were dreadful people. They were cannibals that when they attacked the Arawaks and other peaceful Indians, they would eat them. And not only they eat them, as firsthand evidence of people who saw this recorded, that they would capture the women of these Arawaks and carry them to their place, and they would fill up their house. They'd have dozens and dozens of women. Their whole job was to have babies that they would be born. They'd fatten them up, and then the Caribs would eat them. So they were their source of their food supply. So and they feared them greatly. And at first, Columbus and his men didn't believe it. You know, they can't be people like this. But then he went on an island. He encountered some of the Arawak women that were captive. They were telling the story, and then they began to see bones that had been eaten and then seeing evidence of this.
Stephen, this is starting to gross me out, man. I don't know.
Well, I'm telling you all this because I'm making a petition. We need to change the name of the Caribbean Sea.
Because of the
Caribs?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're leading up to is the accusation that Columbus committed genocide.
Yeah, exactly. I'm about to finish this story, but But so one day these Caribs attacked Columbus and his men, and as they had attacked the Arawaks and had been doing for who knows how long, generations and generations, and so Columbus sent a force, a punitive force, to deal with them, and in the war that ensued, he captured 1,600 Carib prisoners. Now, the Arawaks were thrilled. Their enemies were defeated, and the Arawaks wanted to execute their style of justice against them, but Columbus thought, you know, these are wild and savage people, that maybe they can be civilized and Christianized. So 550 of them he sent back to Spain as prisoners. 650 gave to the local natives, and they did execute their own brand of justice against them, and the remaining 400 were set free. And so here's Columbus. Now, he's supposedly the guy that pillaged the natives, but he was their deliverer. You know, he saved who untold number of peaceful Arawaks from these horrid people. I imagine all the statues they're tearing down, like in Richmond and up in St. Paul and other places, that these Arawaks would love to have set it up in their town square to honor the man who delivered them from their enemy. And this is, you know, I've heard this story. I've heard modern academics say, ah, Columbus was a rotten man. He just enslaved a bunch of the Indians. And they point to it. He took 550 back as slaves. But when you hear the whole story, it's a little different context, isn't it? It's really merciful for these murdering people to have a chance to be introduced to Christianity.
So we honor.
Anyway, that.
Yeah. So we. The bottom line. Why do we? Why have in our history of the United States have we honored? What's the bottom line reason we've honored Christopher Columbus?
You know, because he was heroic in his mission. He said, I'm going to launch out, carry the gospel in response to the Great Khan. That was the leader of what is today China, that area. I'm going to take them the gospel. And,
okay.
And so it was, you know, his men were about to mutiny. No one had sailed out to the West and gone around the earth like that. But he persevered under threats from them. And discovered a whole new world. Now, of course, the natives were here, the Vikings had come in at 1,000, but no one really knew for sure what was there. So he's known because he opened up the new world to colonization from the Western civilization.
Gotcha.
And it enabled, the gospel was growing in Western Europe at this time, and especially in the 1500s. The Protestant Reformation occurred, and the seed was developed that came and planted the United States of America. And so it was Columbus who paved the way for this new seed of civilization to be planted here in the New World. That's why we honor him, because of that.
Gotcha.
Our guest, by the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, is Stephen McDowell, president of the Providence Foundation. We've had Stephen on to talk about some of the historical figures of our nation's founding and origins, because there is a growing war against these individuals. Christopher Columbus has had some statues torn down, so on and so forth. Stephen, let me ask you this. One of the accusations, one of the reasons why these leftists are attacking Christopher Columbus is they say that his efforts led to the colonization of the nations, what we now call the United States and Central and South America, and white people came across and enslaved and genocide and so on and so forth. So we are going to tear his statue down because we don't want to honor him. But the hypocrisy of these individuals seems to be so clear. I don't know how they miss their own hypocrisy. Maybe that's the nature of it. But none of them are volunteering to go back to where white people, white Europeans came from. They want to take all this out on Christopher Columbus, but then they want to enjoy the fruits of Western civilization that they experience here in the at least in terms of America, one of the nations that was founded because of Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, the founders of America weren't perfect. I mean, they had faults and problems. Columbus had faults and problems and shortcomings. Certainly they did. But, you know, as you point out, the people today who are clamoring against these men, they are hypocrites. They don't care about slavery. There's 50 to 75 million sex slaves in the world today. That's more slaves than all of the slaves for centuries that we speak about. What are they doing about them? Are they speaking up for them? They are literally, you know, Muslim Africans enslaving Christian Africans in Africa today. And are any of these people standing up and taking action? I mean, it's easy to clamor against someone who lived centuries ago. Why don't you do something today? And, of course, the biggest log in their eye is most all of them support the killing of unborn babies. You know, 60 million in the U.S. since 1973 have been slaughtered in the womb. None of these people speak against it. In fact, they support it, most of them, saying they have a right to do so. So they have no moral authority to speak toward what they do or what they're trying to do. And really, it's underlying this is just the whole Marxist secular philosophy of life that wants to destroy everything having to do with the Christian faith. But it was the Christian faith and those biblical principles that gave birth to the most free and prosperous nation in history that have given them a platform to have the freedom to espouse all these ideas. And if they remove the Christian foundation, they're really slitting their own throat because they're removing the very thing that gave them the freedom to speak out as they're doing today.
Fred, Stephen, Fred here. Where are the young people who are supporting this? Where are they getting these ideas?
Supporting what?
Supporting taking down these
monuments. The dismantling of Western civilization?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did they learn this?
Jesus taught we become like our teachers. And so anytime we see these rioters and looters and pulling down statues, you've got to ask, okay, what are the families and the schools teaching these people? And if you look, you know, look in our government schools, and you can see that these radical ideas have been taught, especially, you know, in our lifetime, that it's first, beginning a century or so ago, they began to leave out all the Christian part. And then it's become more radically active of, you know, the type of ideas really upon which the French Revolution was built. And that's what we're seeing, kind of the French revolutionary ideas of there's no foundation in any kind of ultimate higher authority. It's just man is his own authority. I'll decide what's right and wrong. And so we'll rise up, we'll throw off the old white European males. But what's what all people find out, if you don't act just like me, then we're gonna chop your head off too. You know, the French revolutionaries chopped off the aristocrats. But then they didn't like what the first revolutionaries did, so they chopped their heads off. You're seeing that happen in Chaz in Seattle right now, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're listening.
It will continue to happen that way.
You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I've got about 6 minutes or left here. I want to have you back on to talk more in depth about the topic I'm about to discuss if we need more time. Slavery. America invented slavery. And we all know this, right?
And
right. So then we exported it to the world, you know.
Nobody else knew about it.
We went back in time to the Egyptians and exported. Anyway, slavery was worldwide during the time that America was settled, or our founding. And it was the Christian influence that ultimately led, our laws
British,
that ultimately led to the end of slavery. Talk about that, if you would.
Yes, as you point out, Tim, slavery has existed in the world since the fall of man. Sinful man has enslaved one another ever for all recorded history. So it's not new. It came with those who started colonized the Western world. And and certainly America, as a biblical nation, they actually took steps to deal with ending slavery before anyone else. You know, 12 million slaves were imported to the New World over a few centuries. 12 million. Only 500,000 came to America. The rest went to the other Latin American nations. Now, in America, before independence, we couldn't do much, though the first anti-slavery laws written were in the late 1600s in Puritan New England. Before independence, we tried to, a few things were done. Even Jefferson in the Virginia House of Burgesses passed a law to end the slave trade in Virginia. The king vetoed it. But after independence, the worldview of most of the founders, some did own slaves, some inherited them and others, but even many who owned slaves, the minority, by the way, were anti-slavery, like George Washington. And so they believed slavery was wrong, needed to be changed, and now that we've become a nation, we can take steps. Within 20 years, half the states ended slavery. Washington is the first president to sign the first federal anti-slavery piece of legislation, which forbids slavery in the Northwest Territory, which were the states of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, that area. That the slave trade, according to the Constitution, was to be abolished in 20 years. It stopped in 10. So steps began to be taken. And I would argue that the founding fathers of America, those that gave us the Declaration and Constitution, did more than any other group of people up until that time to take steps to end slavery, this social evil that had plagued the world since the fall of man. Could they have done more? Well, sure. But you can't say they didn't do anything. They did more than anybody else was doing. The problem is a generation later, they failed to continue the steps the founders took. And instead of seeing it as a social evil, some began to justify it. And since they didn't continue to do what the founders believed God wanted this Christian nation to do, God had to intervene with the war. But the principles in the Declaration and in the Constitution prevail. Those principles that Jefferson wrote, that all men are created equal. And those ideas triumph, and that slavery was ended. And, you know, it has taken, you know, generations for internally for people to embrace this biblical idea that all men are equal in the sight of God. There's the race of human beings that we're all created in His image. This is a Christian idea, and this Christian idea and this Christian nation helped to put an end to slavery all over the world, at least that overt type of slavery that I mentioned.
What's your
slaves and others still.
What's your website, Stephen?
It's providencefoundation.com, and we do have articles on Columbus and on slavery, on founding fathers, and lots of things at providencefoundation.com.
Stephen and I will be leading a tour to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon at Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, two separate tours, in September. If you want information on these Christian heritage tours, spiritual heritage tours, go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com. We'll be back with more of today's issues in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.